Before I start the show, I want to congratulate Effinrad Patreon supporter Kyle Cartwright for winning December's 1910 hoodie giveaway. You can get ad-free episodes, a chance to ride with Effinrad, discounts on epic gear, and win prizes by joining our Patreon today. The Effinrad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Skyview Campers. This game-changing tiny home camper is built by Never Summer in Denver, Colorado. Inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture, these 12-foot lightweight campers at just 1,500 pounds are a masterpiece in design. Enjoy sleeping like royalty under the stars on a true queen-size mattress with a moonroof in your secure, home-like bedroom surrounded by ample ventilation and shades for privacy. Stay cozy with a propane heating system and enjoy well-lit interiors powered by rooftop solar panels. And when it's time to cook, ingenious exterior countertops include a sink and a double burner stove, all under a giant batwing awning. Skyview Campers, redefining adventure. Visit skyviewcampers.com to start your journey today. Wired Snowboards offers quality hand-built custom snowboards built and tested in the coastal mountains. Wired has built me several one-of-a-kind boards that have stood up to my daily shred habit. In fact, my first Wired Chase is still my go-to pow board after seven seasons. Wired brings my imagination into existence. That's fucking rad. Check out wiredsnowboards.com and design yourself a board to last a lifetime. Fixed snowboard bindings are simple, durable, and functional, featuring tool-free adjustments and a lifetime warranty on buckles and base trays. Fixed makes bindings you can count on. Jason Bros created Fixed after a bald-faced trip where his bindings failed, and he vowed to build the world something better. I've been riding Fixed buckles for the last three seasons, and they're still like brand new. He's on to something. Fixed snowboard bindings built better. Rip Curl outerwear is designed to search further in the snow, offering strength, durability, and all-around performance. Whether you're venturing into the backcountry or on the resort, Rip Curl outerwear's got you covered. With a team that includes Chris Rasmussen and DCP, you can be confident that Rip Curl prides itself on creating jackets and pants with technical features that will keep you comfortable on your search. For over 35 years, the Boardroom Snowboard Shop has been Vancouver's premier snowboard shop. Check out the Boardroom's unmatched selection of snowboards, bindings, boots, outerwear, and everything you need to shred. The Boardroom's passionate staff and performance guarantee ensures you'll love what you buy. And remember, the Boardroom ships to anywhere in North America. So go to boardroomshop.com or visit their stores in Vancouver and North Van. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop. Outlive your friends with New Greens Turbocharged Organic Drink Mix. New Greens is a great tasting 100% organic, vibrant green juice mix, and they include sprouted seeds that leave the food in its most natural, healthful, raw state for fast digestion and maximum health. Use code EFFINRAD at newgreens.com for 20% off your new daily breakfast routine. New Greens, my daily go-to. Stay tuned after the show for a chance to try New Greens for free. Support also comes from Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, Cypress Mountain, the Pro Standard GoPro accessories, and our friends at 1910. You can use code EFFINRAD at checkout for 20% off at 1910.com. I've set the intention that EFFINRAD Season 9 will include a big focus on mental wellness, so I'm stoked to be partnering with The Haven on beautiful Gabriola Island. The Haven's 40 years of experience sharing knowledge about how to live more effectively as humans has helped many people. I just got back from a five-day retreat, and I'd describe the experience as transformative. I know I've spoken a lot about psychedelic-assisted therapy, so I feel the need to say this was not that, and it was just awesome. The Haven has a full range of programs based on a foundation of radical honesty. Tap into your inner resources and liberate yourself from self-defeating patterns within the context of a group, in it together, helping to provide empathy, witnessing, and self-acceptance. Go to haven.ca for more program information and use FNRAD10 at checkout for a discount. Also, feel free to DM me your questions about The Haven. I'm stoked to report that by putting energy out into the world, listener Carl Montoya heard how much I'd love to go to Baldface.
Oh, wow.
We'll Amazing. Get you in there, we'll
yeah. I'll ask the listeners of the show.
It is expensive. There's no doubt about it. And it's really hard to get in because it's an awesome experience. When you have your little window to get to a cat or heli spot, usually you're like, this really works. And you keep rebooking it and getting in there.
So when his buddy Travis Snoop realized he couldn't make it to Nelson, Carl reached out to see if I wanted to go. And I went. A very special Baldface edit will be live soon, so watch for that. Thanks, Carl. Estelle Pensiero is a pro snowboarder for Arbor Snowboards. She's also sponsored by Volcom, DB Bags, and Backcountry Access. Estelle's a shining example of the young generation of pro snowboarders. Growing up in Nelson, riding whitewater and Baldface, Estelle gravitated to riding like Jamie Lynn, who's a part of the Baldface family, and spent her childhood chasing the best snowboarders in the world through the Selkirks, which helped her become a world-traveling, business-savvy backcountry slayer. Estelle's riding has been featured in Volcom movies, most recently Newfangled Phenomenons, where she shreds Tahoe with Pat Moore, Brian Iguchi, and Kevin Jones. I'm so stoked to bring you this interview with Estelle Pensiero.
Learn to Ride, I think it's called. Yeah, Burton Learn to Ride. Yeah, it was my board. It was my sister's board. She signed her name. Honey Pensiero.
Aww.
I think it's been the first board of a lot of people in Nelson.
Yeah, we passed that one around.
Should hang it on the wall.
Yeah, that's definitely a board hanger.
Did we start already?
We've started. So we'll use some of that. What was the first memory that you have of snowboarding? Because you were probably snowboarding before you even remember.
Getting to go out in the cat for the first time at the lodge was like really special for me. And once my dad was like, yeah, you can fend for yourself, kind of like designate a friend that's in the cat, like, yo, will you look after Estelle? And just like feeling so good about myself, like, yo, look at me. I'm like up here with all these guys and they're like my friends. And I just felt so special.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's the best feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've become a pretty celebrated freestyle snowboarder.
You could say, maybe. I'm working on it.
I could say it for sure. Okay. Yeah, your style is really good.
Perfect.
And,
thank you.
And your trick selection is awesome. But you're coming from this place where it's this soulful, you know, soul laps. People come from all over the world to basically turn on the snow a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Do you think that you caught that bug? Because, where did that come from? Like, I guess you're just riding natural terrain and you're trying tricks in natural terrain.
Yeah. You mean where did the love of riding or where did the...
The drive to do like trick-based, almost competitive snowboarding, right? Like you're at the point
where you
can compete.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It's like there's always a lot, like pretty black and white, like you're snowboarding competitively or you're snowboarding in the backcountry.
Right.
And there's like... I don't know. If you're snowboarding in the backcountry, it seems that you're usually, you've already done your competition part of your career, or you're like, you've learned your talent in the park and then you've taken it to the backcountry. And I think I've had a unique start to my career just by starting it out in the backcountry, first of all, which is pretty special. And I would say it's not competitive for me. That's like soulful aspect of snowboarding that you're talking about that's like really comes out in Baldface is kind of just like, maybe that is where my drive comes from. Like, that's why I love to snowboard. And it kind of isn't like, I'm not learning tricks so I can compete or so I can film the best video part. It's just like, the more you love snowboarding, the more drive you have to get better. And that's kind of like the best part about snowboarding, like working hard for something and then learning a trick or whatever, like it feels good. And that's like where my soulful snowboarding comes from.
That's so fun. So you... where do you even go from there? How often do you get to ride in the cat?
Like as much as I can. When I was younger, I was in school. So I graduated from school like 3 years ago, maybe high school.
Yep.
And then since I've graduated, I've spent more time traveling. But whenever I'm not traveling, I'm for sure at the lodge. And I wanted to be more involved in like the working side. So I got my guiding certificates.
Oh, wow.
Some of them.
Really?
Yeah. I'm on this path still, but I've gotten like the basic ones to try and be like, I really have a passion for the backcountry, mm-hmm. and I'm not always sure if I just want to spend as much time in the mountains as I can. So snowboarding is working out for now.
Yeah.
But in the background, it's nice to have like this guiding aspect. So I took my first aid. I took my first guiding or like my first professional course. So this winter, I'm hoping to just like get out instead of just like as a guest, as a guide a bit.
So can you guide on your snowboard? Can you do all these courses on snowboards now?
Yeah, it's kind of like becoming more and more common. It's right. still super skier based and like most of the people in the courses are skiers and it's like
Of course
there's all these like stereotypes about what it is to be a guide. And the organizations that are running the courses are pretty like ski guide, Canadian ski guide and stuff like this.
It's
like pretty skier based, but they're inclusive and they're stoked.
Yeah.
It's just like I don't know.
Do you have to ski and snowboard? Are there still parts of it that you have to do on skis?
Everything can be done on the snowboard.
So when Craig was the very first person to ever challenge, like, look, I want to do this on a snowboard.
Yeah.
And he had to learn how to ski in a week to pass a test.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah,
that
I'm so glad they're
judged
more inclusive.
Him on skis and he barely made it because...
Well, props to him for making it on skis. It's it's not, well, it's like you put your work in, but it's not super easy to do it even on a snowboard. Like,
right.
I can't imagine having like that extra added thing on top. And even the judgment, like the stigma around being a snowboard guide is becoming less and less, especially with Baldface. Like super grateful to my dad for building this community where like most of the guides are snowboards. It's like totally flipping the switch, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. The experience is crazy. Have you ever gone to any other lodges?
That's a good question. I've been to CMH in the summer.
Yeah.
And other than that, I've been to like huts and stuff. There's like a lot of huts around BC that they're all touring
huts.
And stuff.
Yeah, touring huts.
Yeah, and I've never been to another like mechanized place. Heli skiing at Stellar and stuff, which is for sure all skiers and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm always in a group of snowboarders, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's
actually
really cool. That's what I'm in this day and age, like for me to be coming up into the industry as someone who's like, I always in the backcountry, it used to always be like, I'm sure for Craig and for my dad and these guys, it was like, you're the one snowboarder and a big pack of skiers and your guides are skiers and they're stopping on like with a big uphill, like just pull up the uphill. And everyone's like, good one. But we're like, now here I am. And I can be like, even a guide, a snowboard guide is like, it's awesome that those guys kind of like did the hard work. So now I get to ride in a group of snowboarders.
Pioneered it. Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's awesome for all of us.
Yeah. And pretty lucky to reap the rewards of their hard work.
Yeah. Your dad was the original snowboard lodge.
Yeah. Like, that's why it's so unique.
I'm sure there's other ones around the world now that are catering more.
Yeah.
But he was the first.
Yeah.
Which
for
is
sure.
so sick.
It's cool how he found a way to do it without being exclusive. Like, you don't want to be like Alta or Deer Valley or saying like, oh, we don't want skiers to come to Baldface. It's a snowboard lodge. But like by hiring guides that are snowboarders and supporting them too, like whatever. So you see some potential in a snowboarder. You're like, we'll pay for you to go to guiding school or whatever.
So how close do you get? Like how much does it feel like family people that work at the lodge? Like someone like Kevin Sansalone or I'm trying to think of other... Bald-faced people like Jamie and Deanie.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
Like
these guys are always family.
Yeah.
Like there's some people who have been working at the lodge. Like me, I was just born with like 100 uncles and aunts. Like everyone's just like in my life.
All around you all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And the people working there are like half of the culture. And then the people coming through are also half of the culture. And there's like the people who have been working there my whole life, for sure. They're like part of my family. And then the people who have been coming through every year, like.
Oh yeah, of course.
For me, it's kind of like, yeah, I see these people every year and they're the same because they were, I don't know, I met them when they're like 40. And now they're maybe 55 or something.
Sure.
But then for them, they come once a year to Baldface and they see how the lodges change. And then they see me growing up and it's like special for me, special for them to have these like connections everywhere.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm grateful for this. The connections through Baldface are like my biggest asset in snowboarding. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I won't deny it. Like without my connections, I wouldn't be anywhere. Well, sure. Maybe, but yeah, in the you beginning, don't know. Just like, right.
Yeah.
It's one of the most important things, I think.
Right, right.
Being well connected is something I'm so grateful for, and like I'd never want to take it for granted.
So in the background, is there, you know, because you were fairly vulnerable when you first came in, like if I know myself, I'm self-conscious about a lot of things. Yeah. When I think about someone like Jess Kamira, who wanted her talent to show no matter what, so she distanced herself from like dating snowboarders. She didn't want anybody to be.
This.
Yeah. So like, do you feel sometimes like, oh no, people are going to think that the only reason I'm.
Holy, yeah. You're hitting the nail right on the head.
That like, happens.
Yeah. It's like, I like to talk about it, but I don't talk about it that much. But in my internal thought process, it's like front and center all the time. Like I know that I kind of come up in this really privileged way. Which is like, I'm so grateful for it, but I can see how people would be jealous maybe or skeptical about why I've been given all the things I have been given. Like, I'm so lucky to be where I'm at, but it's not because of my talent.
Right.
And even if it is because of my talent, I wouldn't have the talent I have without the opportunities. Like, even to the reason why people start their careers in the park and in the resort is because it's accessible. And just to say that, like, you're a backcountry rider when you're 20 years old is privilege in itself. Like, the backcountry is not an accessible place, and that I've just been given it to me is like, all I can do is take the opportunities and like, remember to stay thankful and take advantage of them.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people that would be in your position that would want nothing to do with it. So like,
I've thought about it, but you can, if you're given opportunities and like somebody, this is like super random and maybe a bit vulnerable, but like a while ago, somebody's been sending me messages on Instagram, like, you don't deserve anything you have. You need to learn how to work. You need to go get a job. You act like you've earned something in this world, but everything's given to you. And I was just like really hurt by it. And then I thought about it for a while, and somebody I don't remember who I talked to, but they were like, you can either, if you're given opportunities in this world, you can either like deny them and say like, oh, I don't want anything to do with this because people are going to think I'm entitled.
Mm-hmm.
But then that wouldn't make me feel better, and that wouldn't make them feel better. Like, the best thing you can do is take advantage of the opportunities. Like, you think that person who sent me mail would be like, oh yeah, so you're doing really good by saying no to everything just so that people don't think you're entitled. Like, why would I? It would be way worse if I said no. Like, oh, Estelle, do you want to come out in the cat today? No, I would rather just sit in the lodge because people might think I'm entitled. I would rather like hit a rail in front of the lodge because that's what
or
is accessible to everyone.
Or not do anything because people are going to think the only reason that I even hit the rail is because my dad started
Bald
Face.
I'm so glad
face.
You
right.
said this. It's such a... Yeah, it's a big problem for me. And I wonder how much of it is in my mind and how much of it is actually what other people think. Like, I know people think about me in this way. Like, how can you not? You see me, you're like, oh, look at that girl. She grew up in the backcountry. She grew up with privilege and opportunity. And
so this is a story you're telling yourself. So like, the story I tell myself about Estelle Pensiero is that you caught the bug, which must be great for your dad because your dad has the bug.
Yeah.
That it has nothing to do with... Oh, she's this way because of her circumstances.
Yeah.
I'm like, how lucky for him. His daughter does the thing that he loves to do. So that opens up, holy bully, that opens up traveling to Japan and riding POW with your daughter. So I offered to my children, you know, the first board we had was a 109. So it was, they were still small.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first powder day with both my kids, like riding under the lift, you know, 2 feet of POW, falling, laughing, filming, getting clipped up. Like, it was such a heart warmer for me.
Yeah.
But over the course of their lifetime, as my son became more into, you know, cars, and my daughter is a DJ and she's into other
cool
things, and that they didn't get the bug. So for me, that's the story I'm telling myself. Now, even the person who wrote you that is telling themselves a story that's not true. So they're imagining what's going on for you.
Yeah.
Even me imagining that what you're going through is a little bit of self-doubt because it's imposter syndrome. But everybody has it.
I just learned about imposter syndrome. Yeah. Big time I have it. And also something I've been thinking about is like my own imposter syndrome. I don't need to project it onto other people. Like I could have said like, oh, you think about me as some entitled person who doesn't deserve anything, but really like maybe I think about myself in this way and I just project it onto everyone else. Like probably the amount of people that are really thinking that about me is like not even close to the amount that I imagine people are thinking.
But
about
you
me.
Get one message from one person and now you're imagining there's a lot more out
totally.
There.
And it's crazy how one negative comment is worth a thousand positive. Like people are so kind to me and everybody's so supportive. And this like snowboarding community is so lovely and people are just like the best. And then one person is just like unhappy with where I'm at. And it's like drowns out all the positivity by one negative
they're
thing.
Unhappy with where they're at.
Yeah.
Like if you're spending your day, if I was spending any part of my day looking for a 20-year-old person.
Yeah, I was like 15. Also, 15 it was a long time ago.
Oh, to be a
and then
kid.
The same person waited like 3 more years, made another secret account, and sent again like you're awful. I was like, why are you doing this so much?
Messages from one person who's pretending to be two.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. You just said one negative comment's worth 1,000. I would say it's worth infinity good comments.
Yeah.
Because there's so I at one point doing the show, I had to say, okay, I keep going back to these negative comments and reading them over and over
again.
It's
so hard not to.
And so I limited myself. I said, until I read all the good comments, of which I don't have enough time in my life to read all of those.
Yeah.
Which there's only a couple of hundred, but that's a lot.
That is a lot.
So I start looking at them.
A couple hundred people are super stoked on what you're doing.
Right, exactly. So I'm reading those. I've told myself I can read the negative ones, but only after I've read all the positive ones.
That's a good practice.
Who do I owe gratitude to? Like, should I be thanking this negative person for like finally opening up my eyes that I talk too much over the guests? Or should I be thanking all the people that are like, we loved that episode. That was so cool. Like,
exactly.
I owe those people my gratitude and I owe it to them to not obsess over this one person that's being a dick. And so from that, I've actually, as a 50-year-old, I can tell you that I've gotten to the point where the negative comments, I can even think of like a way of just diffusing that and saying, you're right. I do talk too much.
Yeah.
And I'm working on it. And also, sometimes guests are a little more timid than other guests, or the topics we're talking about are really uncomfortable. And so I start talking too much. Thank you for pointing it out. And so far, to a person, they're like, oh, no big deal. You know, like,
yeah, or oh, I was just having a bad day. And and also to base your whole mindset and self-talk around one person who's having a bad day, it's not like they're like thinking about it for like months, like, oh,
no,
I can't wait to say something bad about this.
And they might not even know that they did it 2 days later.
And also the internet is a crazy thing. Like you can really feel anonymous. Like sometimes I wouldn't say bad things about people, but behind a screen, it feels way easier. Like if I had something bad to say about someone, like I would be like, I would never say, oh, you suck. This video is horrible. I hate your podcast. But
I
behind a screen, you'd be like, oh, nobody's going to know it was me. Like I can just spew my negativity all over online because it's so anonymous and it doesn't feel real almost.
I've definitely done some negative comments. Not like a troll though.
Yeah, me too. Like I would just say
like in a space where you're upset and then you're just like, I got to get this out of me.
Yeah, for sure. Or someone who has like, I don't know. If somebody told me their opinion that I completely disagreed with in real life, I would be like, oh, well, okay, I don't agree with you, but I respect your opinion. Yeah. Online, I'd be like, oh, this is so stupid. How can you be so dumb that you believe this stuff? Like, you really think the earth is flat? Like, you're an idiot.
Wow.
But I would be like, oh, yeah, you think the earth is flat. Like, fair enough. You believe that. You just are so unkind online. I am guilty of it.
Yeah. You know what? We'll let that pass. Ambulance.
Uh-oh.
One of the things about, because social media is naturally divisive. That's what it's doing.
Yeah.
Because somebody's like, we should divide everybody, but because it's like, we need to get engagement. And in order to get engagement,
so much content we gotta support.
Yeah, we got to put out something that catches people's attention. And what catches your attention is like Nicholas Mueller saying that the Queen's eating babies,
something
right?
Extreme.
You're like, oh my God, yeah. That guy is off his nut. But really, he's the nicest dude.
Yeah, he might be a victim to this, like, algorithm is crazy. I was listening to a podcast recently about, like, the YouTube algorithm, mm-hmm. how it will show you, like, at first it was just you watch a video and the suggested videos are just like random. Mm-hmm. And then it was like you watch a video and all the suggested videos are related to the first one you saw. So if you were Nicholas Mueller and you just clicked on one video about the Queen eating babies, mm-hmm. you like see maybe like 15 other videos from 15 other creators. You're like, whoa, that's a lot of information to back up this claim. Like so many people are saying this, so it must be true. But so many people are saying everything. Like you see 15 videos about this, but there's like 5 million. There's probably billions of videos being uploaded every single day to back up any opinion you have. So whatever you click on, you'll just be sucked to the far extreme of that
right.
idea.
And it's interesting to see it happening to absolutely everybody, right? Like so people that are reasonable people in your life. And then online, they're talking about Indigenous rights, so they're like so upset about it, and they're getting in conflicts with people.
Yeah,
and then you see them in real life, and they're yeah.
It's not like, oh, you know what? People can have different opinions, and that's okay. It's like you don't agree with me, you're a monster,
because it's a radical opinion.
Right,
yeah. and that's what social media is getting more traction towards. So there's a whole bunch of social media that's very, very positive. That's very
inspiring
and fun. And like seeing, I'm thinking of a post of you. What trick did you do? Was it a back seven or something?
Not a back seven if it was me.
Really?
No, I never did a back seven in my life.
Was it a cab five? Would it have been a five?
Where was it? Probably not.
It was off a pretty big jump, and it was really good style, and a bunch
what?
Of the cool
in the
girls.
Park. It was not me.
No, it wasn't in the park. It might have been in a backcountry hit or something. I don't know. I'll have to. Oh, you know what?
You'll
I'm sorry.
Have to see. It probably
you know
wasn't
who
me.
It was.
I'm not doing back sevens.
It was one of the Pelchak girls that did a seven.
It was Juliet.
It was Juliet with the seven that was
in the
like
backcountry.
In the backcountry.
Oh my gosh, best.
Like, is that not like incredible?
Oh
like,
my God.
Sorry, I'm mixing you up with her, but that style was like,
but we can talk about Juliet.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable. But bet you,
so
now she's
amazing.
Your friend. Now ask her, hey, like, do you ever worry that people think that your success is because your dad owns now and is friends with the Yes people?
For sure.
And I bet she does, because it's just a natural way to live in the world.
Yeah, and look at Juliet. Like, who would see that clip of her and say, like, me and you see that clip, and here we are talking about it's incredible, the style's so good, she's so amazing, and then
puts it down just perfect.
Yeah, and then somebody online would just look for something negative to say.
Right. Oh, because you're dead,
yeah,
or something, right?
And some people, anytime they see someone succeeding, they just want to.
So you're exposed to that.
Demerit their success a bit.
So you just came back from a cool session with your, and we don't have to divulge what you guys are talking about.
We can divulge. Okay, I'll tell. I just came back from therapy,
yep.
Which I love therapy. I was like a bit skeptical at first. There's, in my generation, there's not so much stigma about going to therapy, but
sure.
Like in the past, for sure, like, oh, why are you going to therapy? What's wrong with you? But like,
yep.
You go to the doctor for a checkup on your body, make sure everything's going well. You go to the gym, you exercise, like you want to make sure your mind is doing well too. And I went into therapy for the first time, like, yeah, I don't really know what to talk about. And it was just like, then like, boom, the session's over. You like, there's always something to talk about.
Totally.
Always room for improvement.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's fun.
This time I kind of wanted to talk about my mindset going into the season, because I've been riding a bit and getting like super frustrated that I'm not at where I want to be with my stuff yet. Like I want to really be like on it when the season starts, like getting frustrated too easily, feeling competitive, feeling self-conscious and all this stuff. So we like talked about it a bit and it was good.
Yeah. Did they give you some techniques, some help?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to, can I check my phone? Because I wrote.
Yeah. Bring it. This is cool.
And my takeaways about snowboarding was I kind of talked about the competitive. I'm not like a super, sorry, one sec.
Yeah, it's all good.
I'm not a super competitive person, but right. in snowboarding, there's always a bit of like, I don't know what it is with me. Like, of course I'm happy to see other people succeeding, but when I see other people succeeding, there's a bit of like, oh, why am I not succeeding? Like,
oh, almost, interesting.
Almost jealousy, which I feel terrible. This, like, I don't even want to say this. It's just like,
no, that's vulnerable. What kind that's of
person cool. Feels like jealous when they see their friends succeeding. You should be happy. But anyways, she told me that the people that I feel most competitive about and the most jealous, the people that I feel most threatened almost by,
sure,
I should support them the most. Because if you can learn to support these people, they will support you back and you won't feel bad about it. And like the people that I can think of is like, there's this one girl who named Irie Smith. You maybe know her. She's from Whistler and she's like the most supportive person ever. And she's like kind of doing the same thing as me. She's working to get her guiding certificates. She's spending a lot of time in the backcountry and she is so supportive and I don't feel competitive towards her at all.
Cool.
And the people that I do feel competitive towards are maybe the people that aren't as supportive. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, well, maybe I need to just support people more.
That's a great idea.
So that's my new practice. Supporting them. If I start to feel competitive or jealous, I want to like reach out and be like, you're doing so good. And
yeah,
it will take the bad feelings away.
I've heard a few people talk on this. Peter Line, who put together the Forum team, which is obviously before your time.
Mm-hmm. But a Forum, yeah, I know.
Epic team. He basically was looking for people that he was jealous of to put on the team.
So sick.
Right? Because he knew.
It's hard.
Like this feeling I get watching these kids is like jealous, competitive.
Yeah.
That's a good sign but then he's also an incredibly talented snowboarder. So he's using that to be a competitive, talented business owner.
Yeah. And right. What we're saying is like a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
If someone's doing good, especially in like a bit of a more niche thing, whether it's like women's snowboarding or backcountry snowboarding or whatever, like someone's doing well, it's bringing the whole industry up and you can.
Oh yeah.
It's not like there's scarcity of success.
Right. Right. Yeah.
There's enough room.
You're in a different, you're in a different, time frame than, you know, when we were coming up, there were limited. At first, there was unlimited resources. Yeah. If you wanted to be sponsored, you could basically just go to a company and say, hey, I'm really good. And they would probably give
you product. But there was also only one way to be sponsored.
Like, that's right.
You're winning contests. Correct. And you're getting shots in a magazine.
Yes.
And no other way you're going to get sponsored.
No like, other way.
You're right. Not filming parts.
Right.
You're not filming backcountry parts. Like, it's pretty linear. And right. Now it's really like, you can be a total influencer and not even ride that much and still people are watching you and
that's some you're getting crazy the word stuff. Out there. That's crazy stuff, right? Like influencers and just the image of snowboarding. Like I see some people doing it really well. There's this Casey Willax guy. I really like what he's doing. But he's doing a lot of the things I don't like.
Yeah.
Like, you know, board reviews or like, hey, you want to learn how to do 540s? Here's a couple of tricks. But the way he does it is really cool. Like, and he's giving back to the community. He's like, you know, I want to make some money so that I can bring more people snowboarding. Like, cool.
It's cool.
But then there's influencers just for influence sake that I'm like,
but the other good thing about snowboarding is like, they're not super welcome. Like, it's not like an influencer who's just like influencing, not even riding is going to get sponsored by cool companies.
Right.
It's pretty like, I don't know if it's maybe like a club a bit.
What did you think of the Chloe Kim thing where she decided she was going to do like kind of a fashion magazine cover and she was in a snowboard with like high heels and stuff. People were kind of getting upset about that.
Oh, I didn't even check. Should I check it?
You didn't even see. It's so long ago. It's a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I've seen a couple of photos and ads run of Chloe Kim though that are like, she is so talented and she's like such an incredible athlete and snowboarder.
Yeah.
But she's kind of marketed in some of these ads as more of a model and like I don't know. I think that the value doesn't come. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. I think you're struggling with the same thing that I struggle with Shaun White, where he became such an uber celebrity that it was, I mean, it was easy to forget how impressive his snowboarding was. Yeah. Because his snowboarding is incredibly impressive.
Yeah, for
sure. And then it's also the person at the top. It's easier to kind of, you know, be that troll. Go like, oh, he's
totally.
Look at this guy.
Especially because it's so distant from yourself.
Right,
like,
right.
Easy for me to like look up there and be like, oh God, look at this person. They're just such a sellout. And
right.
But it's like, really,
right.
I would sell out for that contract.
Sure. But yeah, and I've also heard about Chloe coming, and you don't have to speak on this at all, but Chloe going to Baldface with a group of the snowboard community and her kind of being like, I'm not a part of that. You know what? They're like, come hit this jump. And she's like, not me. I'm going to do this other stuff.
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know her that well. And I wasn't on that trip and stuff.
Right.
But also, when you're at the top, there's a lot of eyes on you. I can just, I don't know if this is true. I can't speak to anyone else's experience. But for her, I'm sure there's so many eyes on her expecting her to do well and be the best. And when you're put in a situation where you might not be able to perform, like, I don't know how many backcountry jumps she's hit. And when she's put in this situation, everyone's like, oh, come on, come on. And she's just expected to be this superstar all the time. It might be a bit of insecurity about not performing to the level that people are used to seeing you at.
It could have been.
Which I can even see this for myself. Like, me, I won't say I'm like have a ton of eyes on me or anything, but when I'm put in a situation, like I'm put at the top of a park or there's like a rail garden or something, I'm like, oh, I don't even want to drop in. Like everyone sees me with these sponsors and riding these boards and expects me to be really good at snowboarding just because of the sponsors I have and stuff. And if I drop in and like just do terrible and have bad style and whatever, people are going to be like, oh God, she doesn't deserve any of that. And then if maybe Chloe, she's up at Baldface, like out of her element a bit, she's afraid of people thinking she doesn't deserve what she has.
Or she could have just been having a bad day.
Oh,
and
yeah, for sure. There's
and
this too.
She gets to do what she wants now because she's at another level.
Yeah.
Because I think that kind of happened with Shaun White a little bit. People have reached out to me and said, don't crap on Shaun White anymore. And I'm with them on it.
Yeah.
Because what kind of choices are you going to make if Red Bull comes and says, hey, let's make you your own half pipe so you can train and make up a trick that's never been done before.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, what are you going to
say? Oh,
no,
I want to ride with these other guys that I'm competing
like,
against
for sure.
To be cool. I'm more about the cool aspect.
It's
right.
Like people saying, if they were saying to me like, oh, you have so many opportunities, you should just say no to them. You're so privileged.
Yeah.
And if my opportunities are riding at Baldface with a bunch of core people, good, great for me. But if Shaun White's opportunity is to have a private half pipe built, like you're not going to say no to great opportunities that come your way just because of what people are going to say.
Totally.
Like you have to take advantage of the things that come to you.
Yeah. And I think there's a documentary out on him now. I've seen some longer form YouTube videos on Shaun White. And I'm like, that dude's respectable. Like he's so good at what he does.
For sure. Yeah. He's
He's just
I don't
a different.
Talk shit.
Yeah,
he's for sure, like not in the culture, not that much in the industry. Definitely doing his own thing
because he's above the. He's just above that. Like that's what he's exposed to. In my opinion.
My dad saying, "Oh, I really like Shaun White."
I'm a huge fan.
Okay, you should.
Yeah, he is.
I better see you in White Space Outerwear this year.
Though. I'm aware that they said it to me. I'm a huge Shaun White fan.
You hear that, Shaun?
You heard it here first.
Said
my dad's sponsored
White
by White Space.
I'm like a rebel.
Right. That's an actual rebel.
Sorry,
to love the kind of the mainstream guy, you know.
It's also like hard to be cool.
Like, look at what that guy did. Are you kidding?
He's
and also,
so much.
Shaun White is the shit. That's all I'm gonna say. I don't know how he treats people. I've never met the guy before. I met his brother once. He was awesome.
Yep.
And he was on Volcom forever. And like when Volcom was really like in their peak. And fucking Shaun White, look at him. He's killing it. He's like a awkward ginger kid with a heart condition. He's dating a supermodel, driving a Lamborghini.
Yep.
He's got a special on HBO. Like, good on you, kid.
You made it. And also, the other thing is, it's really easy to talk
and
shit
skateboards.
About
skateboards. Holy moly. Pro skateboard.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just have one thing to say. It's really easy to talk shit on somebody like Shaun White, but think about the budget, like the amount of money, it's not about individual companies, but like the amount of money in snowboarding and then how many people that aren't snowboarders are watching Shaun White and being like, who's this, like this guy, he's, what is he doing? Oh, he's snowboarding. And then they're putting money into the snowboard industry because of him. So it's like, yeah, easy to talk shit and say like, oh, that guy sucks. But how much money he's brought into snowboarding is pretty I don't know, proportionate to the amount that he's...
Well, I think what we're talking about here, which is really cool for me to talk about with someone so young, it's cool to hear that you're vulnerable saying, I'm worried about what people think about me.
Everybody's worried about it.
And then you've got these people that seem to be not worried about it that are just going around, you know, trolling people.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other set of challenges, right? Like, so you grew up with this privilege that you get to ride at Baldface all the time. Awesome. But you did also grow up with the challenge that it's like, hey, you fell in love with this thing called snowboarding. And now how do you navigate the waters so that you feel that you're in your authenticity and you're not out there portraying something that you, because on, you can be honest, like some people are going to give you product because holy shit, we want to go to Baldface next year or we're doing a trip here.
As long as I'm not walking through this with my eyes closed, like,
yep.
Oh, everybody wants to sponsor me because I'm such an incredible athlete. And right. I'm surely going to win the Olympics in my lifetime. Like, it's not on the table for me. But as I think that for sure, at least it's a start. People would maybe sponsor me because they don't have to pay for my seat on their photo shoot at Baldface. And then, that's great. But I could just go on that trip and then just, oh, whatever, that happened. Or you can like really talk to people and try to make another trip happen. And then all of a sudden you're not at Baldface anymore. Here you are on a trip to like Europe or something.
Make yourself valuable. Right.
For sure.
I think that's a theme through the show with snowboarders from the 90s and 2000s was trying to figure out what your worth was, what your value was, what the job was of being a pro snowboarder, because there were some guys that just showed up and wreaked havoc that broke things and got drunk and caused mayhem.
Yeah.
And there were some people that took it very seriously that wanted to win the contest because they thought, okay, well, I've got to be there to win the contest. And then everyone in between where they're like, I can get some shots. Like, let's go out with a pro photographer early, get the first track shots. And that's a value.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's so many different ways to be a snowboarder. There's no outline. Maybe there used to be, but not even. Like, you could party, you could compete, you could... There's so many ways, and there's so many different ways to find value in yourself. Like, whether it's as an influencer, or I feel like being a snowboarder is like, you know, those pie charts, there's like a circle and you're either like incredible athlete, wins all the competitions, or you're like incredible athlete. Oh, but you're not like amazing, but you're really good at Instagram. Oh, you're whatever, athletic, Instagram, good at interviews, and you're really good at relating to your sponsors. Like, you always send your invoice on time. You're always showing up to photo shoots. Like, there's a lot of different ways to fill up the pie, but as long as it's full, you're a good asset to any company.
Right, right. One of the guys that you have access to that did it in one of the most successful ways I've ever seen it is Kevin Sansalone.
Yeah.
I want to have him on the show so bad. I love him so much. And I followed his career in real time because he was like a North Shore guy.
Yeah.
And I worked on the North Shore. And he was very, very cool to me, which I think when you're in that position, you can be cold. And there were lots of people, I'm not going to call them out, but there were definitely like Olympic level riders who, you know, when I would fan out and be like, oh, wow, cool, you're at my local mountain, let's ride. And they'd be like, ice you out or whatever.
Yeah, for
Sansalone
sure.
was the opposite. He was just available, hilarious,
and
really, really fun.
That's such a big part of it. And especially if you're going above and beyond, like, he's a good really good at snowboarding.
Yep.
Super, like, personable and good. Mm-hmm. It's just like, there you go. You're like, the full pie chart is full and more.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
People love you and you have connections everywhere. And,
then he built a pro career and he built companies and he built a support system for his
and
friends.
And he's a guide.
And he's a guide.
Boom.
So he's got all these aspects of himself that, like, he was a traveling professional, you know, high paid pro snowboarder.
Yeah.
Then he built his community making movies with his friends and offering opportunities to the up-and-comers.
And then here he has created Sandbox basically and
totally.
Sold, like, he's done well for himself. And the other thing that why it's important to be well rounded is like, you can live in a bit of a delusion that you're going to be at the top of your game and you're going to be an athlete forever, but you kind of have like a certain amount of time before I don't know, you're not always going to be riding like you're 25 your entire life.
That's true.
And then as soon as that goes away and you're kind of like aging a bit, if you've only ever filled up your marketability with being an athlete, you're like, who's, once you're not an athlete, what are you? You're nothing.
There's so many people that,
that's a bit harsh to say, but you're not nothing. But
not nothing, but people deal with it. And the post-career stress of having to work in, you know, in a job where now you're not even a celebrity. You're the new guy that sucks.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And if I look at the people who I see that are older in the snowboard industry and they're still successful, it's people like Jamie or something who's an artist and a snowboarder and putting himself out there in and 1910, like you really...
He's an anomaly.
Yeah.
And he's a Shaun White level talent that chose a different path, chose an authentic...
Yeah, and he's still super talented. But if as the talent declines, he has so many other different aspects of himself that are like...
Yeah.
People still want to know what he's up to and they're engaged and he's interesting.
He's interesting.
Super. Have you had him on the podcast?
I've had him on a few times. Yeah.
So cool.
He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
Like for me, I'm like your dad. I grew up that he was just another level of human being. And he lived that life. Like he authentically lived that life, whether it's on his motorcycle or painting or traveling around doing what he's done. Designing boots for Vans for so long and just
he's
snowboarding
really,
so well.
He's really had an impact on snowboarding, I think.
Yeah.
You can see it everywhere. Like even people who wouldn't know who he is that are still really into snowboarding, they're still impacted by what he's done and the things he's done for the community.
Because just like Jerry Lopez, he's embodied the snowboard life, right?
Yeah.
Like he's lived under the stairs, you know? To snowboard.
Yeah.
Because at
he's
the end of the day.
He's lived under the stairs at Baldface.
Exactly.
When I've been there.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Oh, you're hanging your hammock in the stairs? Yeah. You do it.
Because, yeah, he authentically loves the snowboarding so much.
Yeah.
And the community and the lifestyle and getting to hang with all those people. Like, you see them light up when he's around, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I would say Jamie. He's one of the most authentic people I know.
And yeah.
That his authentic self is someone who loves snowboarding just makes it that much more special.
Now here's a cool thing that you can do as well. And it's just an old man giving you young
let's hear it.
kid advice. Talk to Jamie about when he felt like an imposter, because he did.
Yeah.
He has. I mean, even with all that talent, even with everybody just loving this guy, I've saw it in real time with him where we're up at the Baker Bank slalom and we're taking a lap with him and everyone in the group is just like hanging back to see what Jamie's going to do.
What a pressure that must be.
Right.
For sure.
It's insane.
Like, oh my God, Jamie, pleasure to meet you. I've been waiting to meet you my whole life. Like, can we please do a lap? And then
It's like, hey, there's a huge kicker over here if you want to hit this, Jamie.
Oh, my gosh.
You're here. Let me, roll my phone. Okay, come hit this cold.
Today at therapy, my therapist actually asked me, like, is there anybody, a snowboarder that you look up to that really, it seems like they don't struggle with what other people think?
That's
and
it.
The person who I thought of first was Jamie. And I told her, like, yeah, Jamie's like a really good fan. He's like my family. And it seems to me like he just doesn't struggle with it at all. And she was like, okay, well, why do you think that Jamie doesn't struggle? I don't know if this is true or not, but why do you think Jamie doesn't struggle with this imposter syndrome and caring so much about what other people think? And it seemed like, I don't know if it's true, but Jamie just sees people as people. Like, it's not like he would see someone as a snowboarder and be like, oh, look at that. Another snowboarder. Like, they're threatening me and they're doing the same thing as me. He's like, oh, look at that. Just another person, like a friend, not like this scary entity that's coming to take away your success. It's just like another friend. And he's really good at seeing people as people.
Yeah. He's at very present.
Yeah.
When he's
very
with
present.
Ask him about imposter syndrome around the art stuff. Because I think that he may have had that. That's a story I'm telling myself. That I keep using that language because all this stuff is just me imagining shit, right? Like I imagine what it's like to be you or how you're thinking or what it's like to be him, how he's thinking.
Yeah, I know.
It's just imagining.
I've had a couple conversations with him about this actually, which I totally forgot. The snowboarding, it seems like he's, well, it's hard to have imposter syndrome when you're just, you shape snowboarding. You're not an imposter. Like, there's no way that Jamie's any kind of imposter. Right. But with art, yeah, I've had a couple conversations with him. And as you, as his style changes over time, and once you've kind of created this foundation for how you expect people to see you and the art they're expecting him to make or something, or the way right. anyone's expecting anyone else to ride, like, you kind of have a expectation you have to fill.
So check this out. Imagine you're in an artist's space and you're thinking, oh my God, all these other artists are like legit authentic artists.
Yeah.
But I got this opportunity because I made art on snowboards, and now the snowboard community likes my art, and some troll comes out and says,
yeah,
you're no good. You're exactly. not a part of this art community. Like, I'm sure that that would really devastate him. Same
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. Right? And everyone, especially like, nobody really, well, maybe some people, but I would never run into something headfirst like, yes, I'm here. Look at me. I'm an artist. I'm incredible. I would be right. like a bit like tentative, like, oh, is it okay? Am I welcome in this community? And right. if you're already like a bit guarded and like scared if people are going to accept you, and somebody comes in and says like, oh, look at this guy. He's so bad. Like, you're not an artist, or to me, you're not a snowboarder. Like,
yeah,
it's like, oh God. Okay. I was already a bit scared, and all I wanted, like, the support in the beginning is the most important support. That's why it's important for somebody who's higher up, like Jamie, has always supported me like unconditionally.
Right,
like,
right.
That's the best thing. Like, he can kind of maybe see a bit like, oh, you know, you're maybe having a bit of imposter syndrome. I want to welcome you into this
right.
industry and make you feel accepted. And
so you're 20 now. That first comment when you're 15, you can kind of see it down the road a little bit differently, right? Like, and maybe by the time you're 25, somebody says a comment like that and you can reply like, oh my God, you're never going to meet anyone more privileged than me. Like, I'm so yeah. lucky that I got all this stuff.
For sure.
And I'm so happy when I get anything from any company, because I'm just out there loving snowboarding, as yeah. opposed to being like, oh, damn, you're right. Like,
yeah.
oh, you're no, saying what everybody's thinking. Like,
yeah.
I knew it. So, people are out there thinking this stuff.
For
it's
sure.
It's just a different take on, you know, the same experience. And honestly, now that I'm 50, I'm like, I love having experiences that make me sweat, that like give me a lump in my throat, because yeah. it means that there's some learning going on. There's something important about that. It's not just a day to day. Oh, hey, it's that effing rad guy. Way to go, dude. Like,
for sure. And something you really yeah. care about too.
It means there's something there you care about.
It's going to affect you emotionally.
Yes.
You've put a lot of time, and like, you put a lot of time into this podcast, and
sure.
and everyone's put a lot of time into snowboarding, and
yep.
that's why it's so emotional when somebody, it's like, imagine if you spent like a year painting a masterpiece and someone was like, oh, that sucks, and left. Like, that hurts for
it
sure.
hurts.
To have
yeah.
someone just like shit all over something you've really like put some time into.
Also, you didn't get to choose, your generation didn't get to choose this social media, everything you do is on social media thing.
Yeah, everyone wishes it wasn't. Every one of my friends or people my age, like, pretty sure if you talk to people, I don't know how many people around my age you've talked to on this podcast, but I think everybody would prefer to live in a place where social media didn't exist.
Right.
Because the inspiration and the good is almost not worth the bad. Even me, like, if I looked at my Instagram, I would be like, holy shit, this girl's life is insane. Like, look at her. She just rides. The snow is always amazing. The friends are always amazing. Everything is always great. But what kind of person's going to post like, and if you are the person posting like, hey, everyone, I'm actually doing really bad. Let me write you 10 paragraphs about how bad I'm doing. It's like, oh God, it's a bit of a downer.
And yeah, know. And you don't know what to do, because it's
yeah,
like,
you're like, oh my God, what am I going to comment? Yeah, like, I'm yeah. there for you. It's just
right,
like,
right.
It's like, wow, it's out of the, out, or it's like unusual to see someone posting their bad moments as well as their good moments on Instagram.
So every part of it is weird. Because you see the good moments, you get like, is that, are they really that good?
And you see the good moments, moments, you're like, oh, that person's life is so
right,
good. Why
right,
why
right.
am I not riding excellent
right.
snow all the time?
Right, right.
And you see someone posting the bad moments, you're like, ooh, stop oversharing. But in reality,
yeah, mute,
you're like,
mute, mute.
Yeah, in reality, you're like, it's a bit refreshing for sure. But also
right.
like oversharing the good, oversharing the bad. It's just like, we have to do it as a snowboarder now almost.
Sure.
But
it was nice growing up. Like, when I was your age, nobody had a cell phone. I don't think they really existed. There was no social media until I had kids and I was older.
Yeah.
And so you only became a kind of celebrity snowboarder in very, very specific conditions.
Yeah.
You were in like a great movie.
And I think you had to have way more opportunities too. Like you had to have the opportunity to get in front of a camera. But now here you are with the opportunity every day to get in front of a camera. Right. And you can just be like some random kid with no connections at all. But your friend gets a really good clip of you and you have eyes on you already.
Totally.
Which is, that's the good part about social media. It makes it more accessible to become.
It's dumbed it down though too. It's made it so that the stuff that the top tier guys are putting out a lot of the time is better than, you know, baseline, but it's not the craziest, gnarliest thing that's ever happened.
And we're flooded with so much content every day that it's like somebody could put like their entire season into like an edit that you would see an ad for it on Instagram and you're like, oh, nice, next, oh, next, next. Yeah. And it doesn't get the time and appreciation it used to.
There's so much of it. That's why is that there's so much of it. Right. And then our feeds are personal. Whereas before, you got a snowboard movie and there was some ads at the front and you're like, oh, maybe I'll buy some stuff from those guys because that's cool. And then when you were talking with your friends about it, you all saw the same movie. Now we see clips just willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Right?
It's for sure. It's crazy.
And in between, you've got whatever other stuff that has caught your attention.
Yeah. And the clips are as influential as the movies, I would say. Like we're sitting here on a podcast talking about a clip we saw of Juliet in the back country. It wasn't in a movie, we just saw it on our Instagram feeds and we didn't mention once any of the movies that we've seen this year.
Have you seen some?
Yeah, for sure. I've seen a few.
There's a bunch, isn't there?
There's a bunch.
It gets overwhelming.
There's so many movies. There's so many movies, and there's so many ads for the movies on your feed, and there's so many clips, and there's so many.
Right, because they get dissected and then thrown in as a like, okay, this is out, and then everyone in the movie is pushing it out, so you see all the clips independently.
You have to pick and choose what you want to see. Like,
it's nuts.
I don't have the time to spend every day watching a snowboard movie. And if I did, I could fill the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You could just be watching snowboard movies.
Snowboard movies and clips and people's
all day, every day.
Edits and whatever.
What, as a 20-year-old, what portion of your day do you spend on your phone?
I can check my screen time if you want to check.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. I just drove 7 hours. I probably did 3 hours of screen time somehow.
Yeah. It's crazy how much we go on our phones. And I don't even know. I'm like, holy shit, you looked at your phone for like 5 hours today. And can you remember a single thing you saw? No, it's just mindless.
That's nuts. Right.
Super mindless. And a lot of people, like, not to be saying bad things about my dad, but he's like, I'm doing work on my phone all the time. And he is doing work all the time. But you start on your doing work and then someone sends you a link to a clip that you want to watch.
Every time.
And then you're just watching a random clip.
If you're not honest with yourself, like, I guess there's some of my friends are like, I turn off all my notifications. I'm like, okay, I don't.
Yeah, I don't do this. My average is 2 hours, 31 minutes, but that's not, it's down 30% from last week.
5 hours, 34.
But also, I have to say, this is not bad. My average has been in the past, like, especially when I do a week of travel, like, not a week of travel, but like, I have big travel days in there and I'm like sick for a week, like 8 hours a day. And you're like, you spend 8 hours sleeping
every
night.
That's like a job, right? That's your job amount or your sleeping amount on your phone.
It sucks. The phones suck. Also, like, for me, I'm like, oh yeah, I had a really big day. I'm just going to look at my phone instead of like, it used to be. Like when I was a kid, I read so many books and I still read a bit, but it's like, I'm too exhausted to even read a book. I just want to scroll on my
phone. Gap out on your phone.
Yeah. Right. Or I read a book for, this is also a bit like, I feel kind of guilty and vulnerable to say this, but I would like read a book and read like a bit of a book and then be like, oh, you know, I need to give my brain a break from all this reading and look at my phone, which is like,
that's amazing.
That is so embarrassing that I need to have a break from reading. Like reading should be your break.
Right. Right. But I mean, reading was the old social media.
Yeah.
So like reading comic books and stuff when I was a kid was like a big deal. Like your mom would come in and be like, you don't do that.
Yeah.
Because you're just reading, you know, comic books.
And that, like, my brother and sister are 12 and like if my parents walked in and they were reading comic books, they'd be like, yes, you're reading. Like, yay, great. You're reading. Otherwise, like, oh, God, you're looking at TikTok again? Like, go outside. Right. And every generation has the new thing that's shunned. Like, I'm sure my grandparents were, like, told by their parents, hey, get inside. You've been outside all day. Like, you're not going to be playing out there anymore. And then, like, you and my dad, your generation is like, oh, come on, get out of your comic book and go do something. And then my generation.
Stop watching TV, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, get off your phone and read a book.
Get off your phone. Right, like, and read a book. Right, right, right.
The last generation's thing is always like encouraged for the new generation.
Yeah, that's but weird, isn't it?
I doubt that the phones are going to be encouraged for the future because we can see, like, it's not like reading comic books was detrimental to your well-being or anything.
They talked about it being like, it makes you stupid or whatever, yeah.
This is like, you couldn't, I'm sure the parents were saying this, but me, like, I can see the negative effect. Even Penny and Enzo, my little brother and sister, they can see the effect it has on them. Like, Penny especially is like, oh, God, I looked at my phone so much today. I feel, like, so bad about myself. I saw so many disturbing things. And it's, like, an addiction, though. She's not going to stop.
That's the hardest part about the phone talk is that it's literally an addiction.
Yeah, it is an addiction. I have this addiction.
Well, me too.
I'm like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom so bad, like, fuck, I have to go so bad. But I have to find my phone urgently before I go to the toilet because, like, I can't sit on there and look at the wall. I cannot bear to read the National Geographic on the back.
I did this.
I have to look today. At my phone.
Yeah, I did this today. Like, I got to go, but where's my phone?
Yeah,
I
can't be like, sitting there so for stressed out, like,
a half a second.
It's so urgent.
I remember standing in lines at, like, a bank or at the grocery store and going, I'm not going to pull out my phone because that's just an addiction. Like,
yeah,
I can just stand in a line like exactly. I used to. And then you're like, God damn it. This line is so weird.
We don't have a speck of boredom in our lives anymore.
That's the crazy
Everything
part.
Is just stimulation 24/7.
Right.
And the other thing is like the connection with other people. Your phone can be an avenue to connection, but it's not really face to face. And every time I'm sitting in like a waiting room or something, everyone's just on their phone where like, I'm sure as I never lived this reality, but before phones existed, like people are reading or people, you would just like be so bored. You would talk to someone, but nobody ever gets that bored.
You didn't really talk to each other. I'll be honest. No, like on a bus.
I feel like an idiot to make this assumption.
No, that's fine. A guy who talked on the bus was like mentally ill. Everybody kind of just stood and looked out the window.
I'm sure people thought weird. A lot more. I think I would think a lot more.
Yeah, maybe.
I do a couple, like sometimes I go to huts or go on camping trips or backpacking and stuff. And it's like the things I think about on those trips are like, I wish I could think like this all the time. And the clarity you have is like
connecting with nature, that kind of stuff as
well. Yeah, and even just not having like my phone or if I didn't have my phone, watching TV or if I wasn't watching TV, going out and partying with my friends or whatever it is, like, just to have stillness in your life is important.
Well, that,
and hard to force yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going on these trips, which I'm like, this is going to be so fun, but I'm also like, oh, I'm going to miss out on so much. And then I go out there, like, what could possibly be better than where I am right now?
That's cool.
So perfect to have nothing, no input.
That's really important, I think.
So important.
And then, like creating stillness inside yourself when there's turmoil happening.
That's the next level for me. I don't know how to do this. Like to create, like leave space in my day for this kind of stillness, I have to be like away from everything to feel still. But to find a way, someday I think I'll learn how to find a way to be still in my day to day.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great goal to set, right? Like, and you can talk with your therapist about it. They usually have some pretty great ways of getting authentically into yourself.
Yeah, right? For sure.
That seems to be kind of what they're selling. Like,
yeah, in selling introspection.
I think that's important.
Self-awareness.
Yeah. I think that's a long-term goal and something that you need to work at a little bit at a time, just like nutrition
Pretty stoked I can go to therapy to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I could learn. This stuff isn't, you don't just like naturally know it. You have to kind of learn how to do it in practice. And also, sucks that therapy is so expensive.
Oh.
It's insane. I have extended health benefits because of my parents, but I'm off when I'm 25. Yikes. And if I didn't have that, I would never go to therapy.
Right.
And therapy helps me so much. I think everyone should go, but it's hard for me to say like, yeah, everyone should just go to therapy. It's kind of like me saying like, everybody should just snowboard. It so feels so great, but like, it's really inaccessible. And for me, who's like, I'm not going to say like, I'm so awesome and I have no mental health problems. Like everybody struggles, but for somebody who's really struggling and like feels like they don't have any support, like my family, my friends are supportive, but somebody who feels alone and they really need to go to therapy, you can't go unless you're financially in that place.
I got offered BetterHelp as a sponsor.
Oh, yeah. And so I've heard about them.
Yeah, they gave me 6 weeks or 6 months free or something, a long time. And so you can do like phone help. You get, it's awesome. It's pretty great.
Did you do it?
I did it for, maybe it was a 3 month period. And at the end, I was like, okay, yeah, I should have this as a sponsor. And then I heard how much it is. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Really? So they don't sponsor the show?
No. I was like, can't. I just can't put that on other people and say like, hey, this is really great. Because it's
hard to promote things that aren't accessible.
So expensive. It's so inaccessible, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That sucks. I think maybe that's one of the reasons why there's like a foundational reason why there's kind of stigma around going to therapy and stuff, like, because in Canada at least our medical expenses are covered, and why is your physical health so much more important than your mental health if the government won't pay for it? Like, if the government cares so much about the well-being of the citizens that it will, oh yeah, for sure, we'll pay for your doctor visit, we'll pay for your physio, your rehab, whatever it is, like your physical rehab, like, why wouldn't you support them in that same way mentally? Because I think it's just as important.
Yeah, no, they're not separate. You can't be in physically good shape and mentally unwell.
Yeah,
and what you can't kind of be mentally in great shape and physically unwell. Like, it's just impossible.
Yeah, exactly. They're so connected to each other.
Yeah, because you're a complete individual, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
You're not just a physical body and you're not just an emotional, mental thing.
Totally. It sucks that you have to, I don't know, like really have something bad happen to you. Like you're going to try to kill yourself or something before you can get help anyways.
Right.
Because you can't afford it. Like if you're feeling like you're going to kill yourself and your only option is to go broke or to just feel like to die, what is this world? It's horrible.
So now we have more information about like mental wellness and how important it is to put, you know, have that integrated into a social health system. But the social health system's been under attack for a really long time. So hopefully your generation will take the reins of what's happening in our, you know.
Yeah. I wonder if, oh my God. My train of thought. I wonder if my generation is, because I hear so much more from my generation about mental health and stuff. And I wonder if this new generation is really struggling more than everyone else, or if they're just more outspoken about it. And either way, it's a step in the right direction to people getting help when they need it before something happens.
Yeah, I think that there was always mental health struggles. I just don't think that it was so stigmatized that you just wouldn't bring it up.
Yeah. The more people talk about it, the less stigmatized it becomes. But also the more, I think this is kind of an unpopular opinion, but I see so much about people talking about their mental health on social media that I think people are kind of like self-diagnosing, and it's almost like, oh, you don't struggle, like, well, you're not relatable and you're not deep.
Right.
And so people are kind of like, I'm really depressed. Like, I really need like all this support. And then I would really feel bad and be like, oh, I don't want to say anything because everyone's just going to think I'm asking for attention.
Right. Yeah. No, it's so there's a couple of things there. Number one, the worst thing that's ever happened to you is the worst thing that's ever happened to you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so somebody might be like, I'm so depressed. My parents didn't get me an iPhone 7.
Yeah.
And they're horrible idiots. And someone else is like, I'm so depressed. I don't have any parents.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And I'm really struggling to find my support system. And
but also we can't demerit the person whose feelings are depression of not getting their new iPhone, because that's just like perpetuating people getting imposter syndrome. Like, look at you. You're not like, even to me, like, look at you, you're going to therapy and you don't even have anything wrong with you. Like, look at you, nothing bad ever happened to you. You live this perfect life. And here you are complaining, finding something to complain about. And you're like, oh God, I'm never going to complain again. Like, yeah, the worst thing that's happened to you is the worst thing that's happened to you.
That's it. Yeah.
It's all a scale.
It's difficult. Your generation is fascinating to me. You're exactly my son's age, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was really connected with him, still am, all through high school and hearing the struggles of your generation in high school.
Yeah.
Where the barriers for everything, like it's almost this, like we're trying to level the playing field. So like if you're not really talented at singing, there's auto-tune. So you can, and if you like it, if you identify any way, we want to support you, which all these things are positive in some ways, but they also can be very difficult for people that are like, well, I'm not special because I don't have depression.
Yeah, especially because
I don't require additional help.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. In this is another thing that plays into this, is everyone in this generation is trying to live their own dream. And the goal is not to live the American dream anymore. And the goal of my parents was to get a good stable job and make enough money that you can support your children and send them to school. And that was, everybody wanted this. And now the goal, and what's even being pushed a bit, is like, you have to live your own dream and you have to figure out what your passion is and follow it to the end of the road and be a unicorn. And then when somebody's just like, oh, well, I don't know what I want, you're just like, okay, well, you're just a normie.
Right.
And feeling normal is like shamed almost in this generation.
Interesting.
It's not like,
right, it's a bad word to be like,
yeah, like in your generation it was like you want to fit in and you want to be part of a group and you want to be normal.
Black sheep being outside of the norm, now the black sheep
is like celebrated, and you want to be this like, wow, look at what that person's doing, they're so unique. You just want to be unique. And if you're not unique, you're kind of just like, you're a normie.
I was talking about this with my older friends yesterday, just about how, you know, being a skateboarder in the 80s was like a stamp, like you're outside the norm.
Yeah.
Right? Which on some level was scary, but on another level, it gave you this closeness with this community
that was really, really
cool.
Yeah, super cool.
It felt really cool. But now, you just articulated it better than I did yesterday. I was like, how do you rebel against anything?
Exactly. That's like a total struggle of people now. Like when everybody is trying to be unique, everybody's unique in their own way. And we have like a super rich, rich society. But if your goal is to be unique, it's not going
to
happen.
It's cool for me to get to talk to someone that's the age of my kids.
Yeah, you know? For sure. It was a pleasure.
And to meet somebody that, it's obvious to me that your parents are on the right path. Are they on the right path with your siblings? You think they're doing good?
I would say yes. Those guys are awesome.
Yeah. You love your brothers and sisters.
I love them. My whole family. Brother and sisters. I love my family.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. One brother, two sisters.
Yes. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you
for doing
so
the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Okay. It was such a pleasure.
I really pressed record this time. Thank God. F and Rad. Shout outs this week to Estelle Pensiero and the entire Baldface family. What a trip. Special thanks to Carl Montoya, Ashley, Ian, Sheldon, Joel, and Walt. That was the crew. They were incredible, and the snow was all time. Join the Patreon to support the show. It makes a big difference for as little as $5 a month. And if you want to try New Greens for free, simply tag New Greens on any F and Rad post, and we'll get you those greens. Also, we're giving away 1910 hoodies every month of this season, so tag 1910 in any F and Rad post for a chance to win. Be sure to come back next week for more F and Rad Snowboarding, presented by Skyview Campers and brought to you by F and Rad Productions.